सर्वं परताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतिकां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतं अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी. तद्बुद्धयस्तरात्मानः तन्निष्ठास्तत्परायणाः गच्छन्त्यपुनरवृत्तिम् ज्ञाननिर्धृतकल्मषाः. तद् आत्मानः तन्निष्ठाः तत्परायणाः गच्छन्ति अपुनरावृत्तिम् ज्ञाननिर्धृतकल्मषाः. Buddhiyah, nominative plural, the Bahuvrihi, those whose minds, whose buddhi, the one whose knowledge, whose buddhi, is in that, in Brahman. Right? Those who have knowledge of that, tad buddhiyah, their mind is that, has knowledge of that. Tad atmanah, for those whose self is that. First they have knowledge of that, the buddhi of that. Then tad atmanaha. The tad is Brahman. Right? The one who have knowledge of Brahman. The Brahman atma, which is Brahman. Then tad atmanaha. They have knowledge of the Brahman. Jnanam is there. Then tad atmanaha. Their self is that. They have knowledge of Brahman. Then it's kind of a sequence here. Tad atmanaha. They recognize that their atma, the self, is that Brahman. Tad atmanaha. Tan nishtaha. Their mind is committed to that. Nishta means that knowledge is their commitment. That's the you could say the devotion of the mind, right? The commitment of the mind is to that. Tan nishtaha. Then tad parayanaha. All these are nominative plurals. That is their highest end. That highest end means that knowledge, that recognition of myself as Brahman, it is that knowledge itself that is their fulfillment. That knowledge is the goal. In other words, there isn't anything outside of that knowledge or anything, there isn't anything outside of that recognition that myself is Brahman, that they are seeking. That knowledge is what they were seeking. They've recognized themselves as that. Their mind, that's where the commitment of their mind is, and that is the fulfillment of their desire. In other words, that's their goal. They've reached their goal. Right? Say, I have this goal, and I have that goal, and I have this goal, and that goal. I have so many different goals. That's here, and that these goals have to be achieved. Here, this is the goal. And this goal has been achieved. Yeah. So for this type of people, gacchanti, they go, third person plural, gacchanti, they go, apunar avritim. They go to the state of not returning again. And you'd use gamgach in Sanskrit. They achieve that state. They attain the status of apunar. Punar means again. Apunar means not again. They achieve that status of not going around and around again, of not returning again.
Oh.
There she is. Okay.
Returning again.
She's returning because class is going on. So we'll see how she does. We'll not let her in immediately.
She wants the doctor.
We'll just see how she does. Come on.
Wow.
They know timing us. So
huh? Yeah, Jazz comes to class.
She's comes to class.
She's also looking for something else. Okay, let's get back to it. No, there's nothing to do. Let me finish going through this verse and then I'll talk about it a little bit. They're not reborn again. That's the idea. The Jivanmukta is not reborn again. Then jnana nirduta kalmashaha. These are all third person nominative plurals talking about those people who really have jnana nishta and whose minds are purified through the fire of knowledge, right? Jnana nirdipin. The kalmashas, the impurities have been burnt, have been removed jnanena, by knowledge. Okay? So, okay, let me just go through this a little bit. She has to settle down. There we go. Okay.
Someone's just going to have a recording of hurry.
That's you, Cindy.
I know.
There we go.
Okay.
Thank you.
This is an easy
one. Yeah, this one doesn't help.
Sorry.
You need a new one.
Something.
This verse is touching on something that we don't. It's not that there's no reason not to deal with it, but it doesn't come up that often. What actually happens to the jiva when a person gains self-knowledge and they have maturity in that knowledge, which is what this verse is talking about. It's not just saying they've been exposed to knowledge, they understand it, but the understanding is thorough. The understanding is mature. So they've gained the knowledge, tad buddhiha. They've done the shravanam and the nididhyasana. The knowledge is there, it is clear. But there's also, in the gaining of that clarity, there's stages in the gaining of that clarity. And it moves into the recognition, the real recognition that I am that self. That is, the knowledge takes place, that all is clicking, clicking, clicking in your understanding and it's becoming more and more clear. But at some point you recognize very clearly the nature of your own swarupa, that your nature is Brahman, that I am Brahman, and you can say that this Brahman that has been being unfolded, the vision that's being unfolded, that is me. And so at that time you own it. It becomes very clear that the very nature of myself is what is being talked about. Okay. So that's where the knowledge becomes very alive as myself. But there's more maturing that takes place even after that, where when you first understand, and everybody's a little bit different in this sequence, but as you first understand, the mind will still behave just by habitually, will behave like an ajnani, right? In other words, your knowledge is clear, you recognize it as yourself, but your mind doesn't have a mature vairagya, right? That dispassion is not mature. And so what you'll find is, in spite of your knowledge, you need this to be happy. Even though you don't, your knowledge tells you that you don't, still emotionally, your emotional response is that I need this to be happy. And that is going to be true on many, many different levels. And so there's a nishta. There's a nishta that takes place. There's a nishta that takes place around that too. No. You know? I'm going to put her in the bedroom.
Look, it's see your claws all cut for heaven's sake.
She needs some of your training.
She needs a little training. Is she going
to have her claws cut? She also has mites in her ear. You know that black goo?
Close this door, Carol.
We were just getting to an important part.
I think she might talk about it again. Can I still hear it? What did you say?
I can hear her. She's faster than Carol.
Maybe if you feed her, she'll go to sleep.
See, I know. I was expecting she'd put the cat outside close to the door, but she can't. Isn't that something? Wow.
She's got to have her way.
It's called training. The cat is training.
What can I say? She hasn't been around for all day today and yesterday, and now she decides to come and she wants to be here at this time. Sorry. I'm attached to her, that's the problem. That's right. Animals are so very loving, you know, but what an attachment. They're like having a little person, you know. But the thing is that absolute love, you know, it's also a very wonderful thing to, you know, but because of that you can get very kind of caring about them. Now I care about little Tibby. You know, and I like caring about it too. I enjoy it. Alright.
So we have these habits.
What was that?
Take the time to the emotions.
Okay, let me get back to this.
After Niana.
No, I know where you are. You know, but just a little aside here. What's so fascinating about this is that, and it comes up in other places in the Shastra also, is that the Shastra itself and the teachers, Krishna in this case, and all of the teachers, are very kind of aware of the maturation process that the mind goes through in owning up this knowledge, you know? And so here, say, it's just kind of laying it out very clearly, all of the different things that are happening in that maturation process. First, you gain the knowledge, tad buddhiyaha, means you understand, it's clear, you know? Then you own it. You recognize you. It's becoming clear, clear, clear. And then you, that tad atmana, how you recognize, I am that. And it's not a theoretical recognition. Just a, you know, like, oh, this is logical. This must be the way it is. No. It's the pramana. you recognize the fact of it, that you are Brahman. And yet, there's an emotional lag time that takes place between that recognition and that all of the different parts of the mind owning up the truth of that knowledge, to where the mind itself revels in. Krishna will use the word several times throughout the Gita that the mind revels in the self, because the self is the source of ananda, right? And so the more the mind is with the self, has made that recognition, the more it relaxes, the more it recognizes, I am the ananda that I've sought in the samsara, in the world. My being is the very source of the ananda that the mind has enjoyed, always through the fulfillment of some sort of a desire, you know, something that would, fulfillment of a desire or something that would make the mind relax for a moment, that allows for ananda to, as though reflect in the mind because of the mind's quietude, because of its peace. At those times, the ananda reflects, the ananda whose source is the self, reflects in the mind. Even it can be a total ajnani, that's what keeps us going. We fulfill a desire, we take a walk in nature. So many different things can happen to make the mind become peaceful. And when it becomes peaceful, my own svarupa fills, my own nature will fill the mind, reflect in the mind in such a way that allows me to experience gradations, different grades of joy, because of the different types of mental states that I'm enjoying. The more quiet, the more peaceful, the more ananda is there. And so I become addicted in a way to these mental states. Those are the little leshas, what we call the little leshas, the little particles of ananda that I get to enjoy. They're always only in reference to a mental state, because the identification of the Atma, of myself, is total with the mind, right? For an ajnani. The identification with the mind is total. And so if the identification is total, I am the mind, I am the body, then there's no distance, you know, there's no differentiation between the very Swarupananda, which is myself, and the vritti. There's no differentiation at all. And so therefore, I'm totally dependent upon the vritti being a particular way. I need it to be calm. I need it to be something which does not go against my nature, because there's no differentiation between my nature and the vritti. Right? And so I'm always trying to make it be calm, and then I can feel like, I'm with myself. Right? Now that's not going to be the case once that differentiation is there, because then whether the vritti is calm or agitated, it's differentiated from the one who is calm. Right? If it's happy or sad, the vritti is happy or sad, it's differentiated from the ananda that is constant. That isn't the state for an ajnani. So what this means is that the ajnani's mind, which is everybody's mind until they have knowledge, right, has for lifetimes been totally conditioned to creating a particular type of vritti. Vritti means thought modification. A particular type of thought modification so that I can feel like myself. Right? Because of the total identification that is there. So this is the training, the non-stop 24/7 training of the mind, is to create a situation, to fulfill a desire, to create some sort of situation where my mind can relax so that I can be myself. That's the total training. When knowledge comes along and gives the mind a self, it gives the mind a self by differentiating, right, the mithya from the satyam. It gives the mind a self which is stable. Now the mind recognizes this, but it has beginningless lifetimes of habitual identification and habitually going out, manipulating the situation so that I can have a shanta vritti, a peaceful vritti, so that I can be happy. And so this knowledge comes along, and now that knowledge is competing with beginningless lifetimes of habit. Right? And that's why there's a lag time. So it's not an impossible lag time, it's just a lag time. You know, because the mind recognizes, oh, my own being is the source of ananda. I see it, I know it, I recognize that the self, myself, this is the source of ananda. And there is no ananda other than this. In other words, every desire that I fulfill, there's no ananda out there. I just tricked my mind into relaxing. You know, I think if I fulfill a desire, the mind relaxes, I experience ananda, and therefore the ananda is out there. That's the illusion. And my mind has believed in that. Now I know that illusion very, very clearly. I know that I am the source of the ananda. And that, in fact, that source never wavers, and I recognize that too. But then my mind, for some time, habitually behaves in a way that I know is not true, and even gets itself upset and worried and hurt and bothered and agitated, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
All the while knowing that that behavior is mithya. I mean, the whole thing, that's illusory. You know the whole thing. But the vairagya is just now in these areas starting to mature. What does that mean? He says there's a slow process of maturation where the mind's running out to fulfill these desires. First of all, you see it and do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But then it starts becoming not worth it. In other words, it's too big of a price. You may still have the desire, you might still want to run out and get engaged, but your mind at some point will start saying, no, don't do that. You'll start catching, you'll start pulling the mind back before it even really gets started, because you see the writing on the wall. It isn't worth the agitation. Okay? Then there comes a time when your mind just doesn't go out there. It doesn't do it. You know, rather, it enjoys the situation as it is without asking the situation to provide me with ananda. In other words, here's the situation, moment after moment after moment. This is the situation which I'm dealing with. I'm dealing with it. I can be completely engaged, you know, engaged in it. I'm not trying to distance myself from the situation, but I'm also not asking the situation to be in a particular way so that I can be happy. Rather, my source of ananda is myself, and the mind has matured in this. That's the nishta. The commitment of the mind is to the ananda, the source, the wholeness that I am. That's where the commitment is. The commitment isn't out here, landing on the world in this way or that way. The commitment to the world is the commitment to Ishvara, and the commitment to my karma, commitment to my dharma. Right? That's different because this body, mind, sense organs, this whole upadi is part of Ishvara. And it's an incredible situation. You have knowledge. You have a body, mind, sense organs. And because of your knowledge, you see this body, mind, sense organs as Ishvara and as part of Ishvara. Right? It's Ishvara, it's part of Ishvara. And so then the prarabdha, the story that's unfolding that involves my life, is Ishvara. It's Ishvara's story.
Yeah.
So this part of Ishvara is the unfoldment that I'm experiencing. Right? So I get to be, as a jiva, body, mind, sense organs, you get to experience this part of Ishvara. See what I mean? You're the center of it. Every person is. You're experiencing this part of Ishvara. And that's the unfoldment of your prarabdha, your story. So this is Ishvara. And so then what is your task? And not at all from the mind of a jnani, it's not to gain ananda. I am the ananda. The ananda is Ishvara. The self of Ishvara is the very source of the Ananda. There's no other Ananda. There's only one Ananda. And that Ananda is your Atma, is the Atma. And so the mind enjoys and is committed to that Atma, and if committed to the world, is committed to Ishvara. Not for Ananda, because I am the Ananda. So then what is the commitment? It's the commitment, this becomes like a yajna in the previous, you know, how Bhagavan talks. This is a yajna. Yajna means this is like a worship. It's a relationship with Bhagavan. You know, it's a respectful relationship with Bhagavan. The whole thing that you see is Ishvara. And so that's where Dharma comes in, like when Swamiji will talk about what is Ishvara? It's the order that you find yourself in. So what are your responsibilities? What are your duties in this order? What is being called upon you to do? Now, one kind of easy way, what I find is a kind of a nice way of understanding what is naturally called upon you to do in your situation. Not that there aren't complexities, but I kind of like this way. This body, mind, sense organs, my body, mind, sense organs, it is obvious to me, you know, that if my mind is hurting or upset, I want to make it feel better. If my body is ill or hurt, I want to help it. Right? If you get a cut or something or break your arm or whatever, you want to help it. If you're sick, you want to take rest and try to help it to get well. If your mind is upset, you want to do something somehow to help it back to its condition of ananda or its condition of wholeness. You want to help it move toward freedom from pain. That's what we naturally do for ourselves. You don't think, oh, should I remove the pain or not? You know, the natural attempt is to free yourself from pain. Even if that means sitting with your pain, being with your pain, the reason you're sitting with your pain or being with your pain on whatever level is to cure yourself of the pain. The reason, if it's inner child work, if you're sitting with your inner child, you know, different parts of your psyche, you know, and talking to it, being present to it, it's not to keep that inner child in pain. It's to provide an environment to free it from pain. This is what we call ahimsa, right? To free from pain, to bring back to its natural state of wholeness. In other words, a natural state of ananda. Even the body, you know, we don't want to make the body tense. We want to make the body relaxed. We'll even do exercises where we'll tense up the body, you know, tense it up really tight so that we can relax. Right? That's an exercise that we do for relaxation. You'll tense the body and so that it will relax even more. Why? Because when you're relaxing it, you're bringing it back to its natural state. What is good for it? What is comfortable for it? Okay, so now, if you understand from a jnani's perspective, this body is Ishvara, right? And so it's easy in relationship to this body to be dharmic, to practice dharma, ahimsa, care. But what about when you realize that your whole situation is Ishvara? This whole situation is your body as though. That this body is part of a bigger body, right? Or you can say like this. This body, mind, sense organs, is part of my bigger body, mind, sense organs. That's the truth, right? So what, do you see what I mean? If this is Ishvara and I am the self of Ishvara, then this little piece of Ishvara, because Ishvara's form is infinite, right? So I am blessed, really, to be able to experience firsthand this part of Ishvara through my sense organs body, you know? But this, what should my relationship dharmically, what is my dharma to this field of experience? What is my dharma? Well, what is the dharma to this? That is easy. because the identification with this body is so clear, right? In body mind. So what is my dharma to this and to my mind? That's clear. So extend it. Ahimsa. You know? What helps? We do that up to the skin. What helps? Right? What is ahimsa? What aids? What helps? What helps to bring things back to their nature? To their comfort level? That's why all of these things, we understand that, like I'm explaining it in a little bit different way. But these are the values that all the religions of the world have, even the humanists have. It all has to do with, you know, love thy neighbor, do unto others as you would have done unto yourself. Why? Because there's another way of, and don't do to others as you wouldn't do to yourself. Or you could say, recognize others as yourself and treat them accordingly. Right? Recognize others as yourself and treat them accordingly. How would you treat yourself in this situation? How would you treat yourself? That's all. It's very simple like that. If you want to understand, not that complexities aren't there, you know, but that's the spirit. It can be very complex, like, how would you treat yourself in that situation? I'm not sure. Then you take it to a wise person of your age. The Taittiriya Upanishad says, well, if you're not sure how to treat yourself in that situation, take it to a wise person who's living in your time. That's what the Taittiriya Upanishad says. But that drishti, that vision, you know, of treating others as I would treat myself, seeing that Ishwaratvam, you know, in the creation. Next verse is going to get into exactly this, but that where we're going here is that right now is for this ten nishta. Right? My commitment, the commitment of my mind, is to that jnanam, is to that knowledge. Right? And the knowledge is to the Ishvara and to the Atma. There are two choices, satyam and mitya. Mitya is Ishvara, right? The satyam of Ishvara is the Atma. And so this body is mitya, sense organs are mitya, mind is mitya, universe is mitya, the whole Ishvara, everything within time and space, this whole creation. So that's the body-mind relationship to this creation. That we have to understand how do I see that? How do I see this creation? Mitya means everything that exists within duality. How do I see this? How do I understand it? How do I relate to it? I relate to it as Ishvara. Who is Ishvara? Ishvara is myself. Ishvara is myself. Right? Because the self that I am is the self of Ishvara. And so then that makes clear what the Dharma is. How I treat this is how I treat this. You know? How I treat my mind is how I treat your mind. It's very beautiful. You know, I don't find a flaw in that. And then the ananda, the source of ananda, does not have to do with gaining happiness from an object. It just isn't the way the mind thinks, because that's not true. That's nishta. And at some point, the mind recognizes that that's not true. I am the ananda. My mind, I am the ananda. There is not another source of ananda. And so my mind resting in that ananda experiences Ishvara. And that's the development that comes up, that one naturally grows into in the light of this knowledge. Then that tad parayanaha plural. That's because what a person seeks in life as a samsari. What a person seeks in life as a samsari is ananda, is wholeness, is fullness. But we will seek it through an object or a situation or a person. Right? Let me have this so that I can be happy. That's the desire template. Let me have this so that I can be happy, and then let me have this so I can be happy. But really, if you take out this middle portion, it's really, let me be happy. But that's what I'm seeking. I say, now if this will make me happy, let me have this so that I can be happy. But what I want is to be happy. And is it, let me be happy. Why don't we just say that? Let me be happy. Right? Now, say you recognize that what the human being is seeking is ananda. Right? And the jnani does recognize that. What I'm seeking is ananda. What if I have found the source of the ananda? You know, what that is that's like the, you know, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, right? It's, you know, it's that pearl under the ocean that all of these myths, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, the ananda that every human being seeks, I recognize as myself. That means that I've achieved my goal. Tat parayanaha means that which has been sought is that. What I have sought is that. If what I have sought is that, then I have achieved that goal. There is no more seeking. You can't seek ananda if you are ananda. If you've recognized I am ananda, the wholeness, the fullness that every human being has sought, once I've recognized that I am that, that seeking is over. And when the mind has nishta in that, it is no longer asking the universe to provide what it never has been able to provide to anybody. It no longer is. It's not that, you know, oh, that's all right, you don't have to provide me this anymore because I found it in myself, as though you ever could at any time. It has never, ever been something that the universe has been able to do. It's only been able to fool you, to mislead you, with momentary glimpses of the ananda that you've sought. But once you achieve the ananda and you understand, right, you understand, the mind doesn't seek that anymore. Now, when that is over, that type of, that seeking is over, asking the universe to provide you with ananda, there's an avidya that has been removed. So here when they say, this jnana niruddhuta kalmashaha. Kalmashaha are impurities. We say we're working for antakarna shuddhi. The jnana removes those impurities. But what do they say? Really, the impurities are avidya, right? The number one impurity is avidya, ignorance, because ignorance is the cause for all impurities, right? So, avidya is a little threesome, they'll say. What is really the impurity, the kalmasha? Avidya, ignorance, self-ignorance, which leads to kama, desire, which leads to karma, action, punya and papa. Avidya, ignorance, leads to desire, then kartrutvam, bhoktrutvam come from that, right? And then the punya and papa. From all of that. So it's a bouncing ball. If the avidya is there, then the mind, the vidya belongs to the mind, right? Brahman doesn't have avidya. Brahman's not ignorant of itself. Brahman is the very truth of the entire creation. It's the very being of the entire creation. It's not thinking, I don't know this and I don't know that. It's not thinking at all. It's pure consciousness, right? And Ishwara is not thinking either. Ishwara is already absolute infinite knowledge, infinite manifest knowledge. If you want to say that infinite manifest knowledge is like a thought, you can say that. But it's an infinite manifestation of knowledge. It's not within that knowledge, there's not Ishwara thinking, now should I have a thought or should we go this way or that way? It's already an infinite expression. So this idea of kartrutvam and bhoktrutvam, for Ishwara is not there. You can say bhoktrutvam only in the sense that the entire universe is known. Right? But there's no one saying, I am a knower. Right? No one saying, I am an enjoyer. It's just the fact that manifest knowledge is known. It's like, just to give you an example of this, again, if I use the dream, even a lucid dream, the one when you're not a character in the dream, you're not a character in the dream, nor are you even witnessing a character in the dream, all there is the manifestation of knowledge, which is your total swarupa. Right? There can be many characters in the, there can be many, many characters in the dream, a whole world in the dream, but from the standpoint of Ishvara, you are the totality of that manifestation. Everything about it is known at once. Right? So that's much different than somebody, a character within the dream, who is identified with the body, mind, sense organs in the dream, and then becomes a knower and a doer and a thinker and a feeler, you know, and an enjoyer with his subject-object relationship. That's different than an infinite manifestation of knowledge. So here, so now, getting back to the Kalmashaha, that avidya kama karma. Avidya is from the standpoint of the mind, the individual mind, that says, I am the conscious being. The individual mind is limited, right, and is existing within time and space. So that mind that has nothing but Brahman for itself is also a limited part of this creation. And so it says, I am a conscious being in the form of the mind, and I exist because of this body, and so I am this jiva, you know, who is subject to constant change and happiness and sadness, sukha and dukkha, and I'm also subject to death because the body is subject to death, and I'm actually just working like mad to try to create a little pocket of security and happiness for myself. Right? And because of the Vedas, you know, I know that I have to follow Dharma so that I can get a better life next time. So next time around, so that I can maybe, you know, have more security and more happiness and less sorrow. That's samsara.
Yeah.
And that's all, the ahankara, all of it is born because of ignorance. Right? It's just the same as in a dream character. The dream character is going to say, you know, I'm this limited being, I'm subject to birth and death, and I'm, you know, making my way through life. That's the ajnanam. That's the kalmasha. That's the first impurity. That impurity causes so many other impurities. And what do we mean by impurities? They cause dukkha. That's it. Otherwise, who cares? Impurity, so what? Impurity means it causes dukkha. The avidya, and then the kama, I need to do this and I need to do that to become happy. The karmas, all the karmas that I have to do, and the resulting punya and papa from the karmas, all cause dukkha. Dukkha means sorrow. And so for the jnani, for jnanam, this avidya kama karma, this is burnt. The avidya is removed. And with the avidya removed, the results of the effects of the avidya are removed. As the avidya is removed, the effects of the avidya are removed. I give you the example, you know, in the rope snake. When I am bit erroneously by the snake, because I scratched the rope going by and I saw it as a snake, there's an erroneous snake bite, okay? But it's not erroneous to me. To me, it is real. There was never a snake there. There never will be a snake there. But to me, there was a snake there, and I was bit by that snake. This is avidya. This is the tremendous power of avidya. That avidya of the rope has caused not only the perception of the snake and the snake bite, it's also responsible for all of the reactions in my facing my now facing death as I'm writhing on the floor. On the ground, having been bit by the snake. I'm facing a huge multitude of emotional response to the erroneous snake. But the snake is only an erroneous snake once I have knowledge of the rope. That's our situation here in samsara. I have an erroneous relationship with this creation and with my body, mind, sense organs. I have an erroneous relationship with myself. My mind is taking everything to be, you know, in a way that is totally disadvantageous to my own being. Right? And now I am living that illusion out. I'm living it out. But the problem is what I'm living out is so much against my nature. If in reality I am the whole, my being is not subject to birth or death, it is the very source of Ananda, it is changeless, I am the one who is the self of this whole creation, Ishwara is manifest knowledge, is just an expression of my being, I am the whole, and I've never been subject and never will be subject to birth and death, I've never not been whole, I've never been lacking in any kind of Ananda, I am the very source of Ananda that any of these little light bulbs of minds in the universe enjoys. That's the truth. But that's not what my mind sees. What my mind appreciates is I am a conscious being that it sometimes enjoys Ananda, but I'm also subject to death. I'm subject to Sukha and Dukkha. There is no such thing as stability. There's nothing that I can count on. I can't count on my mind being stable. I can't count on holding on to any of the Ananda that is so dear to me. I get the Ananda, the wholeness, where I feel all is well with me, only to know, to be absolutely certain that that Ananda is momentary, and it always is. Right? The little bliss I experience in the mind, I get it. It's so dear to me. Everything is fine, and I know at the same time that it's going to go. That is the samsara. It's a life of loss of sukha. Right? It's loss of sukha. Yes. And we love you. Don't we? So anyway.
She's okay now.
Oh no, she's okay. Loss, this is the other thing. Loss of sukha is dukkha. Why? Because sukha is our nature. That's the thing. Ananda is our nature. And so the loss, if Ananda wasn't, what if dukkha was our nature?
And we'd be happy with it.
Loss of dukkha would be a problem. You know?
Yeah.
But sukha is our nature. And so when there's a loss of sukha, sukha means Ananda. When there's a loss of Ananda, you want to get it back. You know? You want to get it back. And we say, like in the samsara, everybody is running after themselves. That's what we do. Everybody runs after themselves. I'm sorry. I love you, Tibby. What a thing. How can you love a little animal like this? So anyway, notice that this is the fourth thing. So we've got Ted Buddhiyaha, Ted Atmanaha, Ted Nishtaha, Ted Parayanaha, Jnana Nirdutta Kalmashaha. All four of these things, and you're talking about a Jivan Mukta. We have all of these four things. For such a person, there's no return. For such a person, there's no return. Because who's going to return? What are you returning to? You need the Ajnanam to pull the mind out, to make it want something so that you can be happy. So for the jnani, what keeps you going, keeps a jnani going, because you don't get knowledge and drop dead. Right? When you get knowledge, you keep going. Because your prarabdha, the prarabdha karma, right, is already in operation. The prarabdha karma is already in operation. It'll take you all the way through to your death. Even when you have knowledge, even when you're not asking anything, right? You're not asking anything of the world at all. You're just enjoying your prarabdha. You're not saying, oh, I need this to be happy or I want this to be happy. You're just simply enjoying the prarabdha. But when the prarabdha is over, what is going to pull the mind out of the self? It's already in the self. Your mind is already in the self. Your sense of self is already Brahman, right? Your the ahankara, it's already sitting in Brahman. Your ananda, already sitting in Brahman. Your nishta, it's already in Brahman. Tatparayana, it's already in Brahman. You're already resolved into what you seek, and so when the body drops, what is going to change that? Nothing changes it. There is nothing, there's no gasoline. We say Ajnanam is the gasoline to make the jiva keep going. There's no gasoline. There's nothing to keep a jiva intact. See what I mean? There's nothing to keep the jiva intact. You're already not intact. You're already Brahman. See, for the jnani, already, even though you have this body, mind, and sense organs, yourself is already Brahman. And that's where the mind is sitting. But the mind, body, sense organs is living out the prarabdha karma. And so it's already Ishvara. This is Ishvara's manifestation. And so when the jiva dies, when the body, mind, sense organs die, then it just goes back into Brahman. It goes back into Ishvara. But there's no knot of ignorance there. And so there is no more reincarnation. You know? Mm-hmm. Then you think, will that be a problem for me? You know? What if I want to come back?
You get to come.
if the mind still wants to come back in jiva form, that means there's still stuff to do. Hmm. But you know, there comes a time when there isn't anything to do. You are Ishvara. It's not as though, this is another thing to understand, with or without this body, you are Ishvara. It's not that, this is another little important point. When this body drops and there is no more reincarnation because there's no more Ajnanam, then who are you?
Brahman.
And who is Brahman?
The self.
And who is the self?
I don't know.
This is what I'm looking for. This is the little thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Brahman is Ishvara. Brahman is Ishvara. Mm. Right? There is no Ishvara away from Brahman. Who's the self of Ishvara? Brahman, right? Ishvara comes from Brahman. So let's think of it like this. Ishvara comes from Brahman, is sustained by Brahman, resolves into Brahman. There is no Ishvara other than Brahman. You see that? If you were to remove Ishvara from Brahman, there is no Ishvara. Mm. So Ishvara is Brahman. Just like the dream comes from you, is sustained by you, resolves into you, you are the self of the dream. Right? You see that? You are the self of the dream. In the same way, you are the self of Ishvara. Ishvara comes from you, is sustained by you, resolves into you. You are Ishvara. There is no other Ishvara. Right? It's just that Ishvara is mitya from the standpoint of all of the nama-rupas, because all of these names and forms, it's manifest creation, it has no being other than the self, than the Atma. So now, don't think that when you drop this body, then all of a sudden you're only Brahman, you know, as though that's a disappointment. You know, I'm only Brahman, I'm not the whole, I'm missing something. Because now I'm only Brahman, and what about Ishvara? See what I mean? This is what people think. I drop this body, and so now I become less than the whole. Because, do you see it? If I drop this body, because I'm a jiva, I'm not Ishvara from the standpoint of the jiva. From the standpoint of the jiva, I'm part of Ishvara. Right? And so if I drop this body and it doesn't, there's no more reincarnation, then the jiva is gone and I'm only Brahman. I hope I'm creating a doubt for you, or I'm... Okay.
Well, isn't Ishvara a body too?
Okay, listen.
The whole body?
Because I really want you to understand this, because I don't think that people get this, and I believe that it's critical actually to understanding what it means to be the whole. If I say, I am the whole now, say when I'm getting knowledge, I say, I am the whole. What I am saying is that I am Ishvara. You can't just say, I am Brahman, and then not be able to say you are Ishvara. You see that? Because Brahman is Ishvara. There is no other Ishvara apart from Brahman. So if you say, I am the whole, you're saying, I am Ishvara. Ajnani should be able to say, I am Ishvara. Now, when this physical body drops, the prarabdha has run out, you have jnana nishtha. Okay? Are you Ishvara or are you Brahman? Brahman is Ishvara, right? So you have to be able to say, I'm the whole. What I don't want a person to think is, now when the body is dropped, Ishvara still is, but I'm just tucked away there as Brahman. You see what I'm saying? Ishvara is, now there I'm the jiva, and there is I'm the jiva that is part of Ishvara. Now. But when the body drops, there's only going to be Ishvara. I won't be there anymore. This is what a person can think. Right? Because, well, look at it. If I'm identified with the body, mind, sense organs, there's no more reincarnation for me as a jnani, the body drops, then as a jiva, I'm no longer there.
The jiva's gone.
The jiva's gone. The self of the jiva is there, which is Brahman. But the jivatvam is gone. The avidya is gone. The sukshma sharira, the subtle body, is gone. The physical body is gone. Right, so that's not there anymore. That means the experiencer, the one who sees this world, is not there anymore. There's no more reincarnation. No more upadhi. No avidya, no jiva upadhi. That's gone. You know, now I'm just, because I'm just Brahman. What does it mean to be just Brahman? How does Ishvara fit into that? This is what I'm asking. Now you're just Brahman. How does Ishvara fit in to being just Brahman? Ishvara is Brahman. There is no one else that it is. The one from whom the creation comes, is sustained and resolves, that is Brahman. And so, whatever is the whole, that is what you are. In fact, that is what you are right now. But the problem is, if we want to look at it in terms of a problem, is that this upadhi, this body, has its own set of experiences that are limited. Right? And so these limited experiences exist within the order of the whole. But this body has its limited experience. This mind has its limited experience. These sense organs have their limited experience. All of them have their limited experiences within the whole. When this set of limited experiences are no longer there, right, then those are erased, but the experience that belongs to the whole is there. The upadhi, that the experience of the whole is there. It's very similar. It's very, very similar to the dream. When you when you're identified with a character in the dream, you're experiencing the dream through the sense organs of the character in the dream. When the character of the dream is not there, you're not experiencing the dream through the sense organs of the character in the dream. You are the whole. And sometimes you can even have experiences in the dream where you're dissociated from the character in the dream, which is you, experiencing the whole and experiencing the character, which is you, from a distance. All of these things are possible. Right? So I don't know if this is helpful to you or not, but to me it was very important to kind of understand, you know, to understand that the self that you are is Ishvara. This self that is Ishvara. And so when this body drops, because there is no more karmas to keep that jiva having a separate individual upadhi, then you are whatever the whole is, which is inclusive of Ishvara. But there is no more reincarnation for you from the standpoint of the reincarnating jiva, because that mind has resolved into the self. Everybody see concern?
To be continued.
Let's just say a prayer. Okay. Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.